Hello, my name is Brad McIntyre, and you're listening to the Cultivated Playwright Podcast, episode number 8. In this episode, I want to talk a little bit about building a personal library. I've been thinking about this recently because I've had to handle books. As I've said before, in the last couple of episodes, I'm raising a small child, and my kiddo is just at the age when he's crawling everywhere and climbing up on everything and getting into every possible nook and cranny of the house. A lot of places he's not supposed to be. And my wife and I are very diligent. We keep our eye on him, and we've put the little padded bumpers on the fireplace, and we've blocked off the DVDs so he doesn't pull them all off of the shelves and stuff. And we kind of make sure he doesn't hurt himself, but we let him crawl around a lot. We let him crawl up on the windowsills and pull himself up on the side of the couch and things like this. And I found that the only thing that I have a hair trigger response to, the only thing that I leap up and run over and pull him away from, is when he starts to pull books off of the bookshelves. They're, of course, in another room, so I have to keep an eye on him as he wanders from the main room, where I usually watch him, into another room. And he is quick to pull books off of the bookshelves. He also likes paper, and he likes ripping up paper, so we've had to be very on top of it to keep him from pulling books off. But I have a hair trigger response to this, because the books are the one thing that I do not want destroyed by a little kid. I don't mind if he pulls the DVDs off the shelf and scatters them on the floor. I don't mind if he, you know, trails toys all over the place, or manages to pull a pillow or a blanket off of a couch or something, but I'm kind of protective of the books, and it surprised me, my first response. It's the only thing in the house that I literally have leapt up and run over and taken away from him, and he looks at me in a confused manner, and like, what? I'm handling everything else. Why are you so upset about these books? Or that's, of course, what I imagine he's thinking. And it's because I think that books are important. I have a mid-sized personal library. Over the last year and a half, I have been highly curating and reducing down my personal library of actual physical books. And I should point out, I'm not precious or pretentious about how I read. I have a huge collection of books on my Kindle and a huge amount of ebooks, but I also have a huge amount of physical books. And it depends on what the book is being used for, and that kind of dictates how I read that book, or how I study from that book. I like to read physical books when I want to keep them for a long period of time, when I want to savor them, meaning I want to sit down and actually read the book. If I'm making my way through the book in a fashion where I have to study it, I also like having the physical book in front of me. But a lot of times when I'm reading fiction, or books that go pretty fast, or books where I don't have to find my place in them once again to like refer back to chapters, I'll often read ebooks on my Kindle, especially when I travel. I like ebooks, or right before I'm about to go to bed. A Kindle is much lighter than a lot of books. When you have that effect when you're reading in bed and you're falling asleep and the book slowly drops down onto your face or onto your chest, you realize you've stopped reading. A Kindle is much nicer to have in bed. You can just click it off and set it on the bedside table. You don't have to find a bookmark like a hardback book. I'm a big fan of hardback books. My entire book collection is hardbacks. If I should get a paperback version of something, I usually send it to this service called $1scan.com. And it is a service that scans paperback books into ebooks and then sends you the PDF copy of the ebook and then recycles the actual book. And so last summer I started sending collections of paperback books to this service, and now I'm converting all of my paperback books into ebooks, because there are random paperback books that come out from time to time that I want to get a hold of. that I wish were in hardback, but sometimes you just can't get the hardback edition, or the hardback edition is just too expensive. So basically, I'm putting together a big personal library. I'm doing this for a couple of reasons. First reason is I believe it is a good thing to have books around the house. I maintain a pretty large library, and I refer back to my library of books quite often. I have many, many books on the theater. I have a pretty good amount of books on biographies of famous people from history, people that have inspired me, people that I study, like Hemingway and Samuel Beckett and John Huston and Theodore Roosevelt and Peter Brook, of course, Robert Brustein's collection of writings on the theater. There's books on philosophy. The books of Elizabeth Gilbert. I'm a big fan of Elizabeth Gilbert. Tim Ferriss books. All kinds of classics, especially classics of literature like, oh, Peter Pan and Red Badge of Courage and all those books we used to have to read back in school or when we were growing up. If I read a really good book when I was growing up, I would keep a hold of it. Oh, there's a variety. Shakespeare is in there. Ruth Draper, the famous monologist and solo performer. I have a lot of books by her. Margot Jones, who was an innovator in the theater and kind of started the regional theater movement. I've got a lot of books on her and her books, of course. Anyway, I maintain a pretty large library, and I think it's beneficial to have this library so you don't have to wait for books to be brought to you and you have them on demand all the time. And also, there's a point that I made in my class the other day. We were talking about the German Duke George II, Duke of Saxe-Meiningen, and he ran a theater company in the 1870s, kind of an amateur theater company called the Meiningen Ensemble. And basically, this guy George II was an aristocrat. He was wealthy, and he had a huge interest in the theater. And so he got together an amateur ensemble of actors, and he put together basically what's called a court theater in his little German state. And he was able to work out some ideas he had about how plays should be put on. Beyond kind of innovating ensemble acting and innovating the use of crowds on stage, instead of having a group of people just mill around in the background or stand around, he would move entire groups of people, huge crowds of people around the stage as units in unison. So like the way birds flock when they're migrating, or the way a drum line at the halftime of a football game, one musician turns and everybody kind of turns en masse and the whole group, the whole unit moves as one. Anyway, George II, Duke of Saxe-Meiningen, was one of the innovators of that. And the other thing that he did was historical accuracy. He was a stickler for accurate costumes, accurate sets. So if he was doing Julius Caesar, he did a lot of research on what did they wear at in the Roman Senate, and what did that level of citizenship wear, and what did it actually look like? What's not the idea of togas and things, but what did they actually wear? What was the archaeologically authentic details of the day? And he tried to put those on stage. And this was at the same time that realism and naturalism were kind of blossoming in the theater in the late 1800s. So it kind of fit with the time period. But I bring up to my students the reason he was able to do this is because he had a huge library. He had a huge interest in drawing, and he was quite a good draftsman and artist himself. But he also collected a bunch of etchings and engravings, and he collected a lot of books. And I kind of point out to my students when I'm teaching that having a very large library, a personal library, back in the 1800s was very, very expensive. It is something that only a very wealthy kind of person could do, an aristocrat could do, because books were not as accessible and not as inexpensive as they are nowadays. And then usually the conversation kind of peels off a little bit in class because I get up on my soapbox and I recommend to my college students that they should build their own libraries if they're readers. And I point this out because of two things. One is, I do believe that the printed word is going to disappear more and more as we go forward in time. So, and it'll take a long time, but I have a feeling, and it's not going to disappear. Like, we'll always have printed books, but I do believe printed books will go the way of, like, vinyl records eventually in the future, and more things will be printed electronically or digitally first, and you'll be able to get a hardback version of them or a paperback version in the future, but the price will go up because that will not be the principal way they are sold. Books are going to be sold in the future. This is a theory I have. I don't have any substantial evidence except observational that this is going to occur. But we now live at the kind of cusp of the switchover to predominantly digitally printed books, and we'll be leaving behind physical books as the main sort of way we read and consume books. So stock up on books is basically the message there. Right now, in where we are in history, books are more accessible. That's the other point. They're more accessible and they're cheaper than they ever have been in the history of mankind. And usually I wait for the blank stares or the occasional gasp of recognition from a student where I am able to follow up and say, yeah, think about that for a second. In all of the history of humankind to this point, we right now, contemporary human beings right now, are living at a time when books, this source of knowledge, are the most accessible and the cheapest to purchase that they have ever been, ever before. Since all of our ancestors, all the generations before us have had to pay more and have not had the search abilities, the accessibility that the internet has offered us nowadays to get any book we want, to hunt it down, to find it. So I point out to my students, I'm like, you should take advantage of this because it's not going to stay like this. History changes over time. We evolve, we move on. So before everything becomes digitalized and the prices go back up, stock up your personal library if you can, or stock up what you want to read. If you're into fiction, get a bunch of fiction books. If you're into theater, get a bunch of theater books. Anyway, I use this guy, George II, as an example of somebody who used their library, his library, to great advantage. And so I just kind of want to cover that today. I'm precious about my books. I keep my kiddo away from books because I want to maintain my library. I want to eventually pass that library on to my son. And he can either sell off the books in the future or use them for his own purposes, but they'll be there for him. It's something that is evergreen that I will use as heirlooms. I will pass on. And I will use them while I'm alive to do a bunch of research with and to round out my knowledge. I also think that reading is important because having books around is part of a good life. When I think of the things that make life really good, like a good meal, good sex, good travel, good conversations with friends, all those things that make life not just tolerable, but enjoyable, a really good book is part of that list. And I enjoy having books near me and around me, and books that provide an experience that adds to life, I think, is important. I should point out, I'm very good nowadays. I used to keep every book that I bought, and I used to buy books on a whim. But now I've become much more specialized as I've gone along, and my reading habits have changed. I've become a much deeper reader, and my interests have become more specialized over time. So it's hard to just get any kind of random book. I think it's both a sign of frustration and a sign of pride when you go to the bookstore and you browse around and you're looking at the shelves and you think to yourself, I already have that. I already have that. Oh, I've read that book. I've read that book as well. I already have that book as well. And you realize you've already discovered a lot of the books that there are to read. But it doesn't mean you've discovered everything. So there are still little gems out there. Or there's still little areas of interest that maybe your knowledge hasn't brought you to yet. And those books are still waiting. Last summer, I got really interested in Goethe, as I brought up in this podcast before. And I've looked at Goethe back when I was in college, and I wasn't interested in him at all. And now I've become interested, and I'm ready for Goethe to be in my life, and I'm ready to appreciate his work. And now I'm discovering all these works by Goethe that have just been waiting for me. They've just been waiting there for me to get to them. I envy you if you discover somebody, a new author, a new collection of books in some way, that's just waiting on you. It's just waiting there for you to discover, and you're in for a treat because you haven't read them yet. So I encourage you to build up your personal library if you can. If you're a reader, if you're somebody who reads and you enjoy reading. Anyway, that's all I had to say about that today. Thanks for listening. Once again, my name is Brad McIntyre. You can check me out at my website, bradmcintyre.com. There's links to all my social media on that website, and you can take a look at the works that I've been up to. I also write books, by the way. I have a collection of my plays and comics available on amazon.com, and so there's links to those books on my website as well. You can also find a tab called Bookshelf, and it has a series of books that I have found to be important or enjoyable in the past, and sometimes I write little book reports about those books as well. But you can see that list on my website, bradmcintyre.com. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.